Good morning, I'm Philip Pong, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Best of Humble and Fred this week, brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, Strain Print, and the official band of Humble and Fred, Play for the Cat. We're going to start with a legendary interview featuring a Canadian artist. She knows everyone, and she's also a very talented musician. Here's the great Leona Boyd, Canadian treasure, on the Best of Humble and Fred.
Is Leona coming up the stairs?
Well, someone make sure Miss Boyd sits down and doesn't get hurt by all these wires and things. How dare you? Hello, Leona.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
A lovely pleasure.
You seem very lovely.
Nice to meet you.
Oh, that your conversation takes me back to all those places I used to stay in.
Where are you from?
Moose Jaw.
Yeah, Moose Jaw. Well, where are you from?
Medicine Hat.
You're from Medicine Hat.
Moose Factory. I'm nope. from England originally.
Oh, you are?
But I lived in Toronto for many, many years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I lived away, so I'm not really that familiar with your show. I lived away 25 years.
Oh, it's okay.
Years.
You know what? Even people that have lived here every day of their lives are unfamiliar with our show. These people in this room are unfamiliar with it.
No, everybody I talk to says, oh, you've got to do that show. Everybody knows them.
Oh, know. Do they?
Yeah. I mean, I lived in L.A., and sorry.
Well, you know, oftentimes people, when they hear a friend of theirs is coming on the show, they might say, oh, you don't want that. That's not.
No, everybody raved about you, so.
Oh, good.
Happy
well,
to be here.
We're happy to have you here. And for those people around North America, obviously, you know, known around the world as the first lady of the guitar. 28 albums spanning a wide range of styles, gold and platinum, an Order of Canada winner, a Juno Award winner, inducted into the Guitar Player Gallery of Greats, and so much more. Say hello to Leona Boyd, everybody. How dare you?
Hi, everyone.
How dare you? I'm playing some music right now from No Remedy for Love. And we'll talk about the music. We'll talk about your new book. But first, welcome.
Thank you.
How old
what
were you?
Gonna play? Which piece are you?
Well, I'm playing. Well, you can
oh, you're playing it now. Oh, okay.
Gentlemen.
Ben,
can we find some
I
headphones?
Wear my hat, so okay, let's take the
no,
hat
no,
on.
You don't. You can keep the hat on if you want. We can just listen. I'm just playing Carretera Libertad.
No, that's an old one. Well,
it is?
A long time ago.
Well, this says August. What is the new album?
The new album here. No Remedy for Love.
Well, that's the one Howard was playing was from your greatest hits, maybe.
Mm. No, it's from something called Camino Latino.
Oh, here we go. Femme Fatale. This is. How old were you when you first put hand to fret?
13. I fell in love with a guitar when I was 13.
Was somebody in your family play first, or you just went, I think I'd like to do that?
No, my father's from Spain, Bilbao, and my mother insisted we'd bring a guitar back. We were visiting my grandparents, and I waited till I was 13 to ask for it for a Christmas present, and then I took little lessons with the guy at the local plaza, and I guess I had some talent, and suddenly I was studying with the top guitar teacher in Toronto and winning awards, Kiwanis awards. And it was just one of many hobbies, but I gave up ballet, and it became my career. Traveled all over the world through it.
But you skipped quite a bit. What I'm curious about, though, is, you know, it's very sort of part of our culture now to talk about the 10,000 hours, Malcolm Gladwell, mm-hmm. mastery of something.
Oh, I'm sure I put
and,
that
and
in.
When you, well, of course you did. But I'm curious, though, was it just kind of a novelty at first, and then someone went, wow, this woman, this human being has a gift? Or was it just one of those things you loved it so much that it became a gift?
Well, it was a combination of both, actually. I just loved everything about the guitar. But at the beginning, I would just play my 15 minutes or so a day. And then my mother was very smart. She took me to hear a classical guitar concert.
Oh, wow.
And suddenly I realized what it was capable of doing. And that's when I got the really good guitar teacher, Ellie Kastner. And then I'd rush home in high school to play. And I started learning all the repertoire. And I was just mad about the guitar. So,
but you chose classical.
I chose classical, yes. Probably one of the reasons also is because folk music was great. I mean, I was a huge fan of the Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan and Beatles. But I tried once to sing Where Have All the Flowers Gone? I'm totally dating myself here.
No, I know that song.
I thought, you know what? I don't think I sing. Nobody in my family sings. And miraculously, I am singing now. But back then, no, it was classical. But I loved the classical repertoire, the Spanish pieces, the Baroque pieces, that's just the sound of the strings, and it's such a very simple instrument, really. Carried it everywhere.
Well, how old were you when you came to Canada?
I originally came when I was 8.
Oh, okay.
Then we went back. We stayed 3 years, went back to England, so I started grammar school. And just this last year, I returned to my grammar school, uh-huh. Sydenham County Girls' School, and played for all the little girls still in their uniforms. Uh-huh. It was really, really sweet.
So when you become really good at playing the classical guitar, at what point does all of a sudden you're sort of vaulted into a different level and people start to know who you are?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just playing little guitar societies, and I used to play the Unitarian Church, get $11 each Sunday mm-hmm. morning. and then I started getting hired by some American companies and an American guitar maker to demonstrate his guitars, and I started getting little gigs all around North America. And I mm-hmm. thought, wow, I can actually make a living doing this. This is amazing. And I'd won all kinds of awards, and I won the Canadian National Music Competition, too. But I went to live in Paris to study with Lagoya. I mean, all this is in my first book, how mm-hmm. it all started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Fred, I know all this. I read that.
Lagoya.
Mm-hmm.
Lagoya, yes.
Lagoya.
My first lover, I should say. Dirty old man seduced me when I was a young innocent at 22.
Really?
But anyway.
Lagoya did.
Yes.
Was that a bad thing or a good thing?
Well, I guess it was a good thing because I get to study with him for 2 years in Paris. Mm-hmm. And but then I found out that he was a real bon vivant, and all the girls had the same...
Said
the same story.
Lagoya got around.
Yeah, so then huh? I dated this wonderful guy with a motorcycle, and we went motorbiking off to London to visit my parents on holiday. And, you know, it's funny. Some people have a lot of talent, like the fellow I was talking about that became my boyfriend for a while. He was so talented, but he had no ambition to make a career of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, I just loved the guitar. I don't think I was a workaholic then. I was just passionate about the guitar. So I wanted uh-huh. to learn everything in France. And I learned French in the meantime, too, which is great.
And a few other things from
from Mr. Lagoya. Yeah. Now, one of the things I was reminded reading about you is that, you know, you've been on... I mean, you know, it's hard to imagine, I guess, when you're 13 years old and you pick up a guitar and, you know, you have an affinity for classical guitar mm-hmm. that it could lead you to being on The Tonight Show.
Yes.
Can you tell us, was Carson on that night?
Three times I did it with Johnny Carson.
So what is that like? Because I'm such a fan. We're both fans of
Ed
that
McMahon
old...
Oh, Ed McMahon and Johnny.
Is it surreal when the curtain opens or there's... please welcome. And Johnny does his thing and...
I remember once he brought my hot water bottle on stage because he saw me warming my hands in the wings. By the way, you two both have great radio voices. You must be good singers. A lot of resonance in your voice.
Neither of us have radio voices.
Well, I think you do.
Well, thank you.
Anyway.
But we haven't been on The Tonight Show.
I did The Tonight Show. I did The Merv Griffin. I did Dinah Shore. I mean, there was John Davidson Show. All kinds of shows.
Amazing.
The Today Show. The Tomorrow Show with Tom Snyder. And I shared a manager with Liberace. And sometimes I think that helped. And Chet Atkins helped get me on the Today Show, actually.
Like comedians, right? They had recruiters for the Tonight Show, right? Where they would recommend to Johnny. Mm-hmm. Like, how would you get on that show? Would that be a request from Johnny? Like, I've heard, or did you know that part?
I think Liberace's manager, who was my manager at the time, Seymour Heller, casually said, oh, by the way, I know this classical guitarist from Toronto. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to live in L.A. for a while because I was doing mm-hmm. all kinds of shows. But I tell the whole casting couch stories in the first book, and I just didn't feel very comfortable. Everybody was prowling after me, and I ran back to Toronto.
Do you think it's fair because in the 70s when you were doing the Merv show and, uh-huh. and Carson and these things, was part of the novelty, and I say this with all due respect to the fact that you're a master guitar player,
mm-hmm.
but wasn't it sort of the juxtaposition of this mastery of an instrument and someone who is as beautiful as you?
Yeah, I guess I was a good combo, but
well,
I really
was. But there was a bit of a novelty there,
yes.
In that you looked so beautiful, and yet you played at a mastery level or beyond. I know that's... I'm trying not to sound...
No,
whatever.
You're right. It's probably the combination of both. And
the fact that
I was daring and like sat on a white horse in the poppy fields of Andalusia and got into all kinds of trouble. They wouldn't release my album in Europe because they said you look too sexy. And I said, well, listen
That's never happened to Fred or I.
No.
Our albums are released.
So they say you look too sexy.
Yeah, you don't look serious enough. And I said, well, you just listen. And in fact, Angel Romero, who's one of the top classical guitarists, paid me a real compliment. He said, you know, when I was recording this piece, Gran Jota de Concerto, which is a tough piece technically, he said, I listened to your version. You have the very best version.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more to the personable, talented, amicable Leona Boyd coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. Thanks so much for listening on this Friday edition. First, a couple of very important announcements.
I saw somebody, I think it was on Twitter, was enjoying a nice spearhead somewhere. I was like, cool.
Wow.
Yeah. People seem to like it.
Was it the Sam Roberts or the Hawaiian Pale Ale?
I think it was the
Hawaiian Pale Ale. Enjoy it year-round. It's a 6%er, so, you know, behold, a West Coast Pale Ale brewed Hawaiian style with pineapple. But again, it's good all year-round, naturally carbonated, unfiltered, and dry-hopped to provide a delicate carbonation and complex flavor. The Hawaiian Pale Ale, available at the LCBO, select beer stores, and, of course, near Kingston, where the Spearhead Brewing Company originates. Hawaiian Pale Ale from Spearhead.
This is Humble and Fred.
And I recall, you know, you've been around our lives for a long time. Leona Boyd is a reference that we've all had. And, you know, you've been famous, infamous for a lot of reasons. Not the least of which that you were, you know, squired around by the former prime minister of this country.
Yeah, we had an eight-year romance and became friends. We kept, you know, our friendship on. He came to visit my ex-husband and I. I got to drive him around Beverly Hills. He came to lunch. It was quite a role reversal, and it was a lot of fun. And I got a letter from Justin. I'd sent him some of the pictures of from his childhood. So it's amazing to think that little boy I used to roam around the woods with is now running the country.
So that an eight-year romance, was that while he was prime minister?
Yes. No. Yes, well, actually, and then when he wasn't prime minister, when he lived in Stornoway.
Right.
But I don't think that was the best time of his life. Mm. And, I turned him down, unfortunately. I loved him, but I wasn't in love. And I know the whole country was. But he wanted me to live in his house that he bought on Pine Avenue. It was so cold. And I couldn't see myself living in
Pine Avenue in Montreal? Mm-hmm. I used to live about six blocks from there.
How often?
Did you really?
Oh, really?
And he wanted me to have a daughter. And I was very pleased that he eventually did have a daughter. I'd love to meet Deborah Coyne sometime.
How often would you, during that romance, how often would you see him?
Oh, we'd find all kinds of ways to see each other in New York. It was fun because we were always hiding from you people, the press. I'd wear wigs and sneak past the press in disguise.
What kind of wigs would he wear?
Hold on. You weren't hiding from Humble and Fred, trust me.
But we had adventures sneaking around the summit conference through the back stairs. There's a whole chapter. And I'm glad that Dundon's released this, my first book. It's called In My Own Key, My Life in Love and Music. Because it really is the crazy life I lived all over the world, opening for Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah, it's really insane.
I had an insane life. I don't think I slept. And then this new book, it's called No Remedy for Love, that picks up in 1998, where I was happily living in L.A., wonderful marriage, except he wanted me to quit the guitar. That's what, in the end, made me leave him. But we're still really good friends.
Somebody wanted you to quit the guitar?
Yes, my one and only husband, Jack Simon. Well, because it was taking a lot of time, and I understand he was older than me. I mean, he looks amazing still these days, but I had quite the life. We traveled all over the world. Ozzy was our neighbor. You know, Pete Sampras lived behind. We hung out with movie stars.
Ozzy Osbourne.
And I played for the OJ jury and got snuck in there. Everybody wants to hear about that experience.
Hold on a second.
I had a great, interesting life.
Wait a second. The OJ jury was like, "Hey, we're bored, we're tired. Can we get some entertainment? Someone we can get a guitar player in here."
Yeah, Lance Ito was a fan of mine, and he said, "Could you come and play on a Saturday morning?" So I got a standing ovation from them. I got snuck into the courthouse, and Jack, my ex-husband, came with me. And then I took CDs to sign to them, but I had to sign to numbers because, of course, nobody could know any of their names.
That's insane.
But I have done many insane things in my life.
Did you socialize with Ozzy Osbourne at all?
Yes. We used to go just across the street. In fact, we took my cat over to play with his dogs.
You could understand.
Yeah, I was going to say, did he ever come over to borrow a cup of sanity or
yeah.
or coherence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cup of... Although he's
a horrible Ozzy.
We used to go more to his house, and he had some great parties. Once he had reindeer and snow in the back garden at Beverly Hills, you know, where it never snows. And Sharon was great. I took her to Cirque du Soleil.
Wow.
And, but it was great because we had police all the time. And I tell in the new book, New Remedy for Love, there's a thing called Crooks and Con Artists, or Crooks Miami Style, I think. And I was in a situation, well, I got in a few crime movies when I was there, and I used the fact the police were out there to fool somebody so I could grab the guitar that he had basically stolen my guitar. And I said, all these police, they're watching you. Don't you ever come back again. And he believed the story and took off.
Do you still play as often?
Well, I don't do 5 hours a day.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Do you have a minimum amount of time that you need to make sure that it... Because I'm assuming you still do some shows.
Oh, yes. I have a wonderful new duo partner. He's 26 years old. Mm-hmm. We tour together.
Well, I want to talk a little bit, too, that you've also added vocals after all these years.
Yes, only about 7 years ago. I didn't sing before that.
But I wanted to ask about the fact that you're expected to be able to play these complicated...
Well, I don't do so much complicated stuff now.
Well, but you still... What is your daily routine? Is it a little bit every day?
I usually try to get to the guitar. Yesterday I was bad. I did yoga, had a massage. No, I didn't do it.
That sounds guitar. Horrible.
But
you're a bad girl.
I know.
The intricacy of what you do, the older you get, is it tougher?
Well, it's nothing to do with age. I mean, Segovia was going till he was 94.
Right.
But I'll tell you, I had something which is through overpractice, so I'm careful not to practice too much. I had something called musician's focal dystonia, and there's nothing physically wrong with the hand at all. But I want to mention this, even though a lot of people get it wrong and think I had some kind of disease or illness, I did not at all. But I want to do this to warn other guitar players or piano players or any instrument. If you overdo it, the brain maps can change and the neuroreceptors are fired so many times. I actually tell this whole story in the book. I had to quit for 6 years, which was absolutely devastating to me. I mean, I still played every day, but I could not believe what was happening, that I could no longer play. One finger was going out, and I went to the National Institute of Health. I went all over the country looking for a solution. And that's when my husband said, okay, look, we can quit the guitar now. It's you, me, and the guitar in the marriage. Now it's just you and I. And I said, no, my darling, I have a gift to give the world. I love playing. I love... So I'm going to do something crazy. I'm going to learn to sing. He said, you can't even sing Happy Birthday. And you lip sync it. I said, well, yeah, I know, but I'm going to learn to sing. You know, I will never be a great singer. But my audiences are wonderful. I love the sound of my voice now. I love playing and having an accompanist, but I don't play the really tough stuff now.
Right.
Just so you know.
So conquer the vocal dystonia?
I reinvented my technique very slowly, sort of retrained my fingers, and most people don't ever recover from it. Many thousands of musicians get this. In fact, the conductor of the Toronto Symphony had it, and he had to quit his violin and became a conductor.
As a guitar player, you were, so well thought of. And you've obviously, had congress with other guitar players.
Yes.
Not in the biblical sense. but, someone like Eric Clapton and Chet Atkins.
Yes.
What is that like? I mean, when a guitar player of Clapton's stature, I mean, does he look at your technique and go, my God, that's incredible?
Well, he was a great buddy of Michael Kamen, and who sadly died, who was a genius composer and film writer. And it was because of him that I had all these different people on the Persona record that I toured with. My best memory is with David Gilmour, because I actually recorded in his house. He had this big mansion and a studio. And I was kind of producing him because I'd written a song called Persona, and he was supposed to do this big solo, which he did. But at first, it had nothing to do with my piece, so I had to kind of coach him. And I thought, well, God, here I am.
Wow.
Coaching the guitar player from Pink Floyd.
Yeah, exactly.
Is he from Pink Floyd? I believe
yes,
not.
Yes.
Okay.
And Bob Ezrin and Michael Kamen produced that.
Have you ever played
Chet, we also recorded in his basement studio.
But I was going to ask, have you ever been intimidated by another guitar player? Like, ooh, I don't know if I want to play in front of
him. No. Steve Morse was absolutely amazing, by the way. He's on the Camino Latino album. And now, these days, anybody can get all of my albums right back to 1975 on iTunes, of course. They're all available.
And they can get your book, No Remedy for Love.
As a Kindle, as a hardcover, Amazon, Indigo. You can get a digital download, two together that you get a deal, I understand. And people can keep in touch with me, you know, through the website. But you said who would intimidate me. I think at the early concerts, I'd get intimidated by some of the critics. Mm. But now, you know, it's just, I don't get nervous before concerts like I used to. When you're doing a major concerto, it's nerve-wracking. I mean, you make one little mistake,
yeah,
which I have done on occasion, and the whole orchestra's kind of throwing right. you to jump.
We were told that you weren't going to play today. Were you intimidated by Humble and Fred? Is that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Is
yes.
that why you weren't going to play
it's
today?
It's too early.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I prefer to play a record. And
well, we've got all kinds of... we've been playing some stuff from No Remedy for Love. I almost brought my guitar because I know some stuff.
I signed something downstairs, you know, to surprise
you. Oh, you signed the other? Oh, you did?
Yes, I snuck my autograph onto your guitar.
Good for you. Well, aren't you the loveliest,
and
nicest
ben
person?
And Ben took a photo.
Oh, Benny.
And did you know Ben is an accomplished ukulele player?
Yes, he told
That's
me.
Right.
Yep.
But the ukulele, sadly, it only has the four strings.
That's right. We have six.
Speaking of strings... when you're in doing a tour, is there somebody that is your guitar roadie?
No. When I toured with Tracy Chapman, she had a guitar roadie. We did all the big opera houses and all around Europe. But I don't. I tour simply. Just Andrew Dolson and I.
No, but who tunes your guitar? You
well,
can't
I do.
Oh, come on.
Of course I tune my guitar.
Leona Boyd can't be tuning your own guitar.
Oh, I just did a show about a month ago with Gordon Lightfoot. And I sang a song that is on this album. It's a tribute to him.
Is this you singing, Lightfoot? By the way,
yeah. Of course.
Beautiful.
No Remedy for Love. Thank you. That's one that how I got the title is, it's a famous quote by Henry David Thoreau that I saw at the Church of the Redeemer, you know, at Avenue and Bloor. It goes, "There's no remedy for love but to love more." And this is dedicated to Leonard Cohen because it's kind of a cynical,
So you're saying about opening
song.
For Gordon Lightfoot?
Well, in the 70s, I used to open for Gordon Lightfoot, but this time I was on the billing with him, and we each did our hour. It's a big festival just out of Ottawa, and I hung around with Gordon afterwards. And,
did he try to seduce you?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. We were just friends. And gosh, in the 70s, he had so many women after him.
No, I know.
Sure. All right. Well, the book is called No Remedy for Love, and it's also an album, and I must say what a pleasure it is to finally meet you in person.
Thank you
know,
you so
every
much.
Once in a while we've had such great luck to interview a lot of lovely people, but every once in a while somebody's on the show and I think, you know, I wish my father was still alive because he was a huge fan of yours. The first time I'd ever heard of you was because my dad had some of your records.
Oh my goodness, you make me feel old.
No.
But you know, in that book I talk about my
He died very young, if that makes you feel better.
No,
he was 14.
Yeah. You two are funny.
Yeah, we
but
are.
In
we
the book,
be.
I talk about my relationship.
Tell your friends.
With Prince Philip, who's 96.
Yes.
I mean, I know a lot of old people. And
did you play in
my
front
mother's
of the...
92. Sorry?
Did you ever play in front of the Queen?
Many times, yes. And just this year, I went to play for Prince Philip in Windsor Castle. I flew over to London because he said, look, I'm not getting any younger.
No.
And I wrote a song for him called Love of the Horse that's on the album.
Yeah, make sure you say the whole word. Love of the
horse.
Not the whores.
Did you ever hobnob with a beetle?
No. You know, one of my big regrets?
Yeah.
Ringo lived just a few doors from me up the hill in Beverly Hills. We shared, our cats shared a veterinarian who would make house calls. And why didn't I just go and knock on the door and say,
exactly.
I'm such an idiot.
Yeah. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us.
I did.
We
got to
take a break. And
nice coffee here, too.
It is good coffee.
Yes. Starbucks?
Mm-hmm. No Remedy for Love, Leona Boyd, who is as lovely as ever, and so nice to meet you.
Thank you, Fred.
And sometime,
you so
if you ever feel like, you know, popping in, we can just, you and I can jam it out.
No, you're Howard, sorry.
Yeah, I'm Howard.
I mixed you up.
That makes
me
you're
Fred.
Howard.
Yeah.
I knew you're Howard, and you're Fred.
Well, you may find yourself turning over in bed, and you may find yourself beside Humble and Fred, and you may ask yourself, My God, how did they get here?
Coming up, we've got highlights from the week, as well as tales from the tin box of archive conversation. I'm Philip Pong on The Best of Humble and Fred, on air and online. There's more to come.
I'm driving home for Christmas. Oh, I can't wait to see those faces. I'm driving home for Christmas.
The Best of Humble and Fred, brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, Strain Print, and Play for the Cat.
The weather in Florida was pretty nice. You know, I didn't really get much. I mean, I got sun on the golf course, but I never laid out by a pool, or I never went to the... I did walk along the beach there in Deerfield Beach, is where I was, just a little south of... Or a little north of Fort Lauderdale, I guess. But, you know, it's Florida. It's the same thing. Portions are huge. Huge! Country is so fat. It's just a big, fat, bloated country. The problem is, they get great value. I ordered something one night for dinner. I had a blackened, some kind of blackened fish. Tilapia. Mm-hmm. I think it was tilapia. Sandwich. It was the size of your head. And it came with a side. It was like $9. $8.95 for more food than I should eat.
That's interesting. You didn't go for that. See, when I'm in Florida, I go for the grouper or the mahi-mahi. Not the tilapia.
By the way, you came up in conversation the first night because one of my buddies from Club Link remembers you ordering... when did you order? Dolphin. And he's still talking about it.
Well, like, for being adventurous.
Just, he said something about, yeah, I remember when Fred was here and he ordered dolphin? He said something like, does he eat any other dangerous species? I said, I don't know. Right now,
wow.
Fred's...
He remembered that.
Oh, yeah.
Dolphin's good.
And I countered with, you know, when I was in Iceland, I ate whale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I like trying different things.
Sure.
I just do. But I golfed 2 days. Well, you might want to call it that. I said it was horrifically wonderful when my wife asked me. Because the golf, I golfed awful. Not that, at my level and below, because I hadn't done it since July. But just being out there in the sun, smelling the grass and... Mm. Looking at the alligators and, you know, I mean, just it was fantastic.
It really was.
And then Wednesday I golfed with the Sherpa.
Sherpa Burpa.
He drove down from Hudson, met us in Clearwater, and we golfed and had lunch. It was nice. And two long walks. You know, on Thursday, the longest walk, 2 hours on the beach. We walked an hour one way and an hour back. And, you know, when you're wearing bare feet in the sand and you're not used to it, my feet the next day, every muscle in my foot was sore, you know, and my calves. But it was wonderful.
What other muscles were sore? See this? See what you started?
What's
this
that?
Is what I saw on the golf course one day, this giant lizard.
Oh, wow.
I know. Look at that thing.
How big is that? It's
pretty
hard
big.
To tell.
It's a size of Stan. No, okay, maybe a little smaller than Stan.
Wow.
It was huge. That's why I took a picture of it. That's like a millions of year old prehistoric animal.
Oh, yeah.
That somehow survived. Same with those alligators. Those buggers, they're big. I only saw one this time, and it was on the other side of a little pond. But it was big. Regularly, alligators just jump out and bite golfers. Happens all the time down there. Apparently, the week before we were there, some guy got his foot bit. By an alligator. Because he was being funny. Like, hey, he went over to the alligator, like, waving a club at it or something.
Well,
and then the alligator's like, screw this. And he took a chomp out of his foot.
The first day we golfed on the Monday, we got paired with, I don't want to say locals. Yeah, one Canadian guy down there for the winter and an American guy. They were telling me at their golf course, idiots will, like, take golf balls and throw them at the alligators. To try and get a reaction.
Yeah.
I said, really?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. And I said, do they react? They said, not often, but, you know, they might. But why would you want to piss them off?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want to waste a golf ball?
Oh, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Why would you want to waste a golf ball? Well, how many did you waste? How many did you lose?
Not many.
Yeah.
No, not many. Not many. Both courses were pretty open.
So I don't really lose a lot of golf balls. I played 4 rounds, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, didn't lose a ball. And then Thursday, I don't know what happened. I think I was just getting tired. On the Thursday round, I played pretty bad. For me, I played horrifically. I lost 4 balls in 1 round of golf. And
that's a lot for you.
The most I would have lost in any round of golf in 2018.
Yeah. I should correct that. I think the first couple, probably the first 3 or 4 holes on the first day, I might have lost a couple. But that was it, I think, for the most part. Anyway, it wasn't an issue.
And the funny thing about being down there for me is I had a couple of really good rounds. First couple of rounds I played really nicely. But mostly I just like being warm. Isn't it a weird thing? Like, you appreciate it more. Maybe it's our age. But I really appreciated the fact that, you know, the wind was warm. You know, you're looking at nature.
Yeah.
And I'm always struck by this. I don't even know how to explain it. But the last day as we left the course, I looked around and I thought, you know, tomorrow I'm going to be back in Toronto. It'll be, you know, 0 or -2. And these people are just going to go on
right
with their lives, you know, not having to worry about snow. Sorry, I'm getting emotional, Phil.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like,
no, I know.
They're, wherever you and I were last week looks like exactly the same. And they're just, you know, it's green. And
well, coming off that horrible November we had, too. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, it's going to be part of my life. It is. When I'm, you know, when I'm older, when I'm retired, like January and February, that's going to, I got to, I'm going to have to. Because for everything you just said, for that reason. I mean, it's a whole different life. It's a whole different attitude. It's a whole different mindset.
Oh, yes.
Like January and February up here, if you could just eliminate that in that environment, why would you not do that? And it doesn't have to be that expensive. So.
Well, I think there's something about as you age, obviously, being cold affects the way your body moves.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, my back, the first couple of days we were there, same with you, mm-hmm. it was really humid. Like, really hot. Like, 30 degrees, feels like 35. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, your body just feels different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know that we noticed that when we were in our 30s. You know, you just get through it, and your aches and pains go away, and all of a sudden, it's like, I'm moving.
One thing I will say.
Yes, please. Say more than one thing.
And you've brought this up. Me in a grocery store, I did notice groceries down there are expensive. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Are they really?
Oh, I'm honestly, Howard, most of the items that I would buy in any given week, so you go in a grocery store and I look at them, there is much or more down there. Like, really? Produce, fruit, meats, everything. Like, there were... It blew me away.
But why did my experience in restaurants, though, why does it seem like their portions are huge,
right,
and they're not charging you very much for
them? Well, I don't know. Like, the place I like to go down there, PJ's Oyster Bar, what you would buy there, and it's sort of like a roadhouse-y type.
Yeah, I've been there.
What I would buy here for $10.99 is $10.99 there. Yeah, but the portions are probably bigger, granted, because that's the American thing.
Mm-hmm.
But even that way, too. I mean, you can get deals. Like, I was at one place, Krabby Bill's or something the other day.
Krabby Bill's.
And she said, you know, happy hours from noon to midnight every night.
Oh.
What?
And, like, a draft of Bud Light was like $1.25. I mean, that's where you save your money. And gas is ridiculously cheap.
Yes. Yeah. The other thing I noticed, too, though, is, and I'm sure this isn't the first time we've brought this up, but again, I was staying in a different hotel this time in Deerfield Beach, an Embassy Suites, whatever that, Marriott?
Hilton.
No,
Hilton.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh, look it up. I'd like to know.
So, every night from, 5:30 or 6 to 7:30, they have a happy hour, and the drinks are free.
Right.
Yeah.
The manager's thing.
The drinks
are free.
Are the beer and the wine and the spirits. Now, they're not premium, and they only give you a couple of choices in each of those categories, but they're free.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got, like, food for you, little snacking stuff. And I just was kind of curious, like, I'm glad we don't do it.
Why?
Because it promotes excessive drinking, which yeah. for another conversation, it seems like, again, why is it okay to promote excessive drinking, but we're still a little sheepish about promoting excessive cannabis? Anyway, but I was really surprised that it was free. I thought happy hour meant they had discounts on booze.
Well, that's usually the case.
That's what I thought.
But a lot of those hotels will do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only like a two-hour window.
Exactly. And they also, the breakfast that was included mm-hmm. was amazing. Like, full breakfast. Guy with a... making
omelets
yeah. and like all the sausages. The problem with sausages is when they're like, they're the little ones, right?
Right.
You can't stop eating them.
Yeah.
I tried.
Keep bringing them up, right? All in the trays.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and while I was down, I didn't have one Trump conversation. One night we were in a restaurant. A guy in a pickup truck was in the back of his pickup truck waving a Trump flag. Just a, yeah, you know what? A profile of exactly who you'd think would like him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It was a pickup truck with the big jacked up wheels, and he had and he was standing in the bed in the back.
Nice.
Waving a Trump flag. But that's all I saw. And then on the golf course once, the guy from Toronto said to me, hey, the Clintons are up there in Toronto for that night with the Clintons at Scotiabank Arena, right?
Yeah, the big Clinton concert.
Yeah, I said it didn't go... I said it didn't go too well. Well, apparently, yeah. They didn't sell nearly all the tickets. So the American guy says, hey, well, he was up there. You should have arrested him. And I said, jokingly, well, you don't want too many of your presidents in jail, do you now?
Yeah.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more from the week on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong, on air and online. First, a couple of very important messages.
You know what's really impressive?
What's that?
The work that the retirement Sherpa does.
Oh,
each
yes.
and every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, he's creating wealth for people, families, for generations. And if you have any inkling of retiring in style, you must use the retirement Sherpa.
Tim is a portfolio manager, and Raymond James is a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Yes, he is. I think he'll be here tomorrow. He's back in Canada.
Yeah.
And we haven't found out exactly what he's going to be talking about, but you can bet it's something that will help you if you have money that you want to invest, if you're in a position where you're getting ready for your retirement and you want to know what to do with your money, with your assets, with your property. He is the guy to talk to. He's Tim Niblett. He'll put it all in perspective for you. The Retirement Sherpa, retirementsherpa.ca is where to find him.
If you're trying to make your experience with cannabis better, like a lot of people, make sure you get the Strain Print app. Download it for free, Apple or Google Play. Strainprint.ca. You know, the people there have been on the forefront of research when it comes to the experience of cannabis. It's not just about getting high, not just about, you know, beginning all, you know, messed up and just watching Netflix for hours. It's also about, you know, medicine. It's about the technology and the way to connect with others on your cannabis journey. You put in the, you know, what is it? Whatever your symptoms are.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get Strain Print will tell you what others are using to combat them, whether it's, you know, frozen shoulder or tendinitis or a wonky knee. These are all the things. My foot is bugging me, even though I don't have the gout.
Phil, rub Howard's foot.
I got something with my foot. Strainprint.ca. Find out what to do with it. Strainprint.ca. Use cannabis a better way.
This is Humble and Fred.
You know, you've got an interesting survey we're going to get to. The survey is about what would you rather have, a great night's sleep or sex? And it's kind of what you were saying. For the longest time, you know, I would answer that instantly, like, yeah, man, I like to do the sex. Sex is good.
Juice.
But I slept in, I guess it was Friday night into Saturday morning. I slept for 9.5 hours. Because the night before, I got back in the middle of the night. Because, you know, I'm, by the way, traveling with me, because you said you had some flight delays, right, Phil?
Yeah, 13 hours.
Traveling with me now.
Hold on.
Oh,
traveling with me is the surest way to get your flight delayed. Three flights in a row. on my way to New York, and then on the way to Fort Lauderdale, delayed.
Really?
Yeah, just an hour. And then on the way back, delayed a half an hour. But that got us back into the city at around 1 o'clock in the morning. By the time I got here, it was 2:30.
Oh.
And then I got up a couple hours later because I'm a good boyfriend, and I drove Rachel to work.
Aww.
So the next night, I had the best sleep in of that break that we had. Mm-hmm. It was magical.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Like, do you when you get 9 hours sleep, when you're so used to only getting five or six or whatever, it's like... It was the best part of my vacation was that 9 hour sleep in.
I don't. That, you know, that's a tough one. I don't know. Because I never get. Was that 9 hours without moving?
No. I mean, I got up to go bathroom. I did bathroom.
Bathroom.
I did some bathroom breaking.
If I was to get 9 hours sleep, I would probably sleep six and a half, seven, wake up. Then go back into a power snooze and feel like crap when I got up.
I know what you mean.
Like on the weekends, do you think this is compelling for everyone to hear? Our sleep patterns. How old are we? I mean, really?
Yeah, by the way,
I hope you're charting this, listeners.
By the way,
Fred sleeps this much, and Alex sleeps this much.
Well, when you ask the question, is it compelling? I don't know.
Do you care?
But continue. But asking that question makes me think it's not. But I mean, listen, we've had more innocuous conversations.
I understand. But on the weekend, even, you know, on our down days.
Downtime.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
I'll wake up usually around the time I get up for this, which is around 5. And then I'll sleep till 7. Mm. And then I make myself get up. Because if I went back to sleep when I get up, I'd feel like, oh... Just over rested. So I can't remember the last time I would have.
Me neither.
Slept. Like, stayed in there for 9 hours. I don't know.
How about on the plane?
Or sleeping.
On Thursday night. On Thursday was the last day I was in Florida. Fred stayed for a couple more days. Mm-hmm. On Thursday, we got up early. Because it was the last day of the tournament that I was hosting with our good friends at Club Link. What a great time. 100 people. Lots of great golf courses. Fantastic. But Thursday, we got up early, hit the checkout of the hotel. Our tea time was 8:30. So I was up really early. I was probably up around 5:30 or 6. Then we played. We had the last day of the tournament. Then we had the little banquet, the presentation. And then two people and me, had a 9 o'clock flight that night. So we thought, well, why don't we just golf some more? So we played 36 holes that day.
What?
Yeah. Played 18 with the tournament. Then we went and the three of us played another 18 holes.
For fun.
Then we went to the airport. Then we had to drop off all that stuff. And we got on the flight late. And I literally fell asleep as the plane was taxiing for takeoff. And I woke up in Toronto. But the problem was that 2.5 hour sleep or whatever it was, I couldn't get back to sleep when I got here. Mm-hmm. So my point is rarely do I sleep for more than 6 or 7 hours, and the 9 hours was the best. It was the best day of the vacation because when I finally got out of bed, I was like, "This is what normal people feel like."
And then what happened? No, that's
then I woke up.
You know, you son of a bitch.
You then what happened?
Son of
then
a bitch.
Then you get up. Then what happened?
We have on this. I'll go back to shows where we have detail.
I know
detail.
I know.
Detailed. Your many.
Just fucking you.
I know. And it's working. You son of a bitch. Oh, I'm just saying, ironically, the best day of my vacation in terms of rest was the day after I got back.
What I don't understand is how people say I can't sleep on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
I just went to Tampa, and that flight's, what, 2.5? I slept all the way down, and I'm not even tired. Like, I've had a good night's sleep, even coming home.
Sure.
I'm telling you, before that plane took off on Saturday, I fell asleep at about 20 minutes before landing. I woke up. I don't know what happens. They put me to sleep. It's fantastic.
Is it because of the smooth flight? Or do you feel like you're cradled?
I don't know, Phil. I don't know what it is, although I'm not complaining. Because people say, have you got earphones? Do you have your iPad? Are you going to watch a movie? No, I'm going to sleep. And then what happened?
Well, yeah.
What are you reading?
I'm trying to find some music.
I listened to your compelling sleep story. The least you could have done was listen to mine.
I was. I saw where it was going. You slept on the way there. You went and slept on the way back.
You slept.
By the way, speaking of airplanes, I am. I got my Nexus, my global entry interview.
Oh,
yes, I do.
Fancy
man.
We traveled with another couple, like we often do. We get to the Tampa airport, and then we go. We arrive at security, and this woman says, "Let me see your boarding passes." And the couple that we traveled with randomly got selected for preferred or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to take their shoes off and belts and all that.
Oh, TSA pre. That's what they're called.
Okay.
Pre. Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make sense. And I'm not saying that because we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were selected at random, what if you are the guy with the gun? What if you are the guy with the
Hold on a second. I just tuned back in.
Wow.
And I apologize. That's a very compelling story. But I'm trying to find something for the show that I should have done prior to the show beginning.
It's called, yeah.
So are you saying that Darren and Lori, did they have Nexus?
The four of us are together? No. It's just a random thing. So we get up there and she said, "Can I see your boarding passes?" And theirs had a little code on it that ours didn't. So they got to go right through.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to go through all the nonsense, right?
Right.
Taking your shoes off, your belts, and all that stuff. And I said to the woman, I said, "That's interesting. Why would that be?" And she says, "Well, they, you know, if your number comes up, it's random. Or," and this was interesting, "I think for $89, you can go through an interview process."
Right.
"And for 5 years, you can get that treatment if you pay for it." But again, none of it makes sense to me. Like, what am I missing here?
Well,
I'm
confused.
A terrorist, don't I go for $89?
Yeah, I'm a little confused because I had to go through an application process.
Yes.
Yeah, but that might
apply
be something
for
different.
Nexus.
Yeah, but that might be, yeah.
And I don't know what
this is a Nexus. What's
I don't know
called,
what
Phil?
You're talking
it's called
about.
TSA Pre, so that's just the security part of the administration.
Now, is that an American thing?
It's an American thing, okay. Mainly. But the program that you applied for, that I just applied for, ironically, Nexus,
yeah,
will give you that treatment as well, mm-hmm, but it also gives you a fast track through immigration.
Because
so it's both.
It does your eyes, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, I know it's an old joke, but that taking off your belt and taking off your shoes is just ridiculous. You know, the old joke is, one guy, you know, shortly after 9/11, nearly 17 or 18 years ago, one guy had a bomb in his shoe or a device in their shoe.
Right.
And we all have to take off our shoes now.
Oh, yeah.
For 18 years. But they've got a gun death in that country every day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And people have their shoes on all the time. You know, it's just, I mean, I did it, and it's funny now. It used to be you'd get in the odd security line where you wouldn't take off your belt,
right,
or your shoes. But now it seems like it's universal.
You know, an attitude is everything.
Mm-hmm.
How often do I say that? Not too often, but attitude is everything.
I don't know. Let's chart it.
My wife, she has all these bangles that she wears.
Yes.
And they can't come off.
No.
So when she goes through, she says, "I have these bangles." They say, "Okay." But they scrutinize her a little bit more because, you know, the me, 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 everything goes off, right?
Great.
Well, Saturday coming through, they gave her the once-over. Like, this female person was like just her hands everywhere and like across her front and
yeah,
lower yeah body, and I'm thinking, is that uncomfortable for Delise? And I said, "What's that all about?" Expecting her to say, "Yeah, that was a bit over the top," but you know, attitude is everything. She said, "No, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
If it means everybody's safe, I'm fine."
Yeah.
Well, you know how many people, what I saw her go through, how many people would complain and bitch and say it's ridiculous, but she just took it all in stride.
I had the same thing on the way back from Fort Lauderdale on Thursday night. I had emptied my pockets, took my laptop out, did all that stuff, and it was weird because it was the machine you have to go through with your hands up in the air like you just don't care.
The smart suite.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I had to go in there, and the thing goes, and I went back to the pass just for a second, came back. And I came out of that machine, and he said, "Oh, sir, we have to check you because I guess something set it off." And he did the same thing. He said, "Is it okay if I touch you?" And he went all around my groin. He did a little groin box.
No, I know.
He did side, above.
I'm not saying I felt anything, but there might have been a graze. Mm-hmm. There might have grazed. Some Gray's Anatomy. He grazed my anatomy.
I was
G-R-A-Z.
I was embarrassing because I was wearing my catheter pants. You know my catheter pants?
Yes, I do.
Quite roomy.
Yeah.
And then I had to take my belt off. I get in that machine, put my hands up, and my pants fall down.
My pants fell down.
It was awful.
And then you said, I've got nothing to declare in my pants.
I said, I have nothing to declare. And he says, I can see that.
Yes, yeah. You buggers.
This is Humble and Fred.
The best of Humble and Fred, powered by FYI Music News, the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, Strain Print, and our newest sponsor, the official band of Humble and Fred, Play for the Cat. Welcome back to the Friday edition of the Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. If you just turned on your radio, thank you so much for listening. We're going to feature a couple of wonderful conversations from the archive. So let's start with kayaking being dumb.
Kayak.
It's you have to use your hands
well,
to do it.
That?
My wife got one last year.
Well, seriously, go out there. It's like, okay, you know, I borrowed a buddy's life jackets so that we could go. Kai went. Rachel went around the whole bay for like 20. You know, she was like super kind.
You ever thought peaceful, good exercise?
Yeah, I did all that.
Being one with nature.
Sure. Listen, I was peaceful and one with nature. Like mm-hmm. Me and Stan and I, Rachel spent most of the time doing a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle tribute to Canadians' Mounties, mm-hmm. Canada's Mounties. It was insane.
But kayaking, stupid.
Oh, yeah. Listen, jigsaw puzzles are stupid, too. But not for me. I mean, for her, she loved it. I'm telling you, every time I would go over to the jigsaw table and start to think, oh, maybe I'll help her out. And I just look at all the pieces and go, nope. No, thank you. Too much chaos. No, what I did is I read this book. I read an Anthony Bourdain book. He wrote called Medium Raw, interesting, about his life. The guy was troubled. And then I just stared. Stan and I stared at the lake for hours.
I saw a report last week that Anthony Bourdain left the bulk of his estate to his son. The estate, $1.2 million. That was it. I couldn't believe it. What's he been doing with his money?
I don't know, man. But
you can almost, you know, you can't help but have an estate worth that much in his.
He spent a lot of time doing drugs. He spent the entire 80s.
He, expensive ones.
Before he got famous, he spent most of the 80s addicted to heroin. And several times in the book, he mentions having contemplated suicide.
But don't you think just one season of that would pay him more than that?
No, because those shows he
USA.
Was doing.
USA.
I know. USA. Greatest country in the world. I mean, that sounds low to me, but, you know, who knows? He had X, Y.
Maybe it was a mistake. Maybe it was should have been 11.2, but it said 1.2.
Okay, well, now you've got me here. No, listen, there's no doubt that doing a jigsaw puzzle is, you know, not for me. But I can tell you, my girl, you know, she's got the kind of brain. She just loves organizing that stuff. And I was like, whew. Couldn't do it.
So you were there Saturday. Yeah. Saturday to Saturday. What day did you start getting twitchy? You didn't?
No.
Really?
No, I loved it. I didn't want to leave.
Did you go hit balls or something during the time?
Oh, no. We did a day trip. We did something every day to leave
did
the
you?
Cottage. Every
did
day.
You? Went on a nice hike?
Yeah, went to Gravenhurst. Mm-hmm. Weird little town.
Yeah.
A lot of Gravenhurst reminded me of like Moose Jaw near a lake. It was it looked like it had worn down a lot.
Gravenhurst?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We were in Gravenhurst, we looked at a few stores, had an ice cream cone, and went home. Whilst in Gravenhurst.
Lots of fat people?
It's some very
because I know they bother you.
What are you talking about? What? Lots of fat people. They bother you.
I know they bother you.
Bother me
eating ice cream.
A lot of fat people in line at the ice cream store ahead of you. You're thinking,
you know,
oh,
here's the thing.
What?
I'm sitting in front of the ice cream store,
what?
Just sitting there with my dog,
right.
who's laying beside me on a leash, like the good boy that he is,
yeah.
Talking to people as they come by to pet the stand.
because they can't believe how beautiful he is. That was my experience. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
But.
All right.
So Rachel was in this store, like Stedman's, like an old, one of those old fashioned stores like Zeller's where they still, and they still have like a luncheonette counter.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, that blew me away.
Yeah.
And they serve like the open faced turkey sandwiches on white bread.
Nobody's told them what year it is yet.
Freddie, she called me and she goes, "Leave, Stan, you got to see this."
Yeah.
And it looked exactly like the 1960s where the open-faced sandwiches had the peas on them.
Yeah.
So I was waiting for her in front of that store with Stan. She came out, and I gave her a little kiss, you know, as you do. I sort of snuggled up to her. We were having a moment, a romantic moment there on the streets of Gravenhurst.
Are you right?
And you'll love this. Mm-hmm. So I, before, while she was in the store, I saw this woman, probably in her late 50s, early 60s, and with her mother, who was 100, and you know, like one of those old people that, you know, has literally shrunk to the size of a, you're not sure if they're a child or, you know, they're just small.
Crocodile.
And she's all white hair. And anyway, she gets her mother into her minivan while Rachel was in there getting some stuff. Okay, we were getting pool noodles so we could noodle around. Rachel comes out and I give her a little, you know, kiss and a hug. And the woman who had just put her aging mother into the van, as she's pulling away, yells, "Hey, get a room!"
Oh, did she?
This is a stranger. We thought it was hilarious. Literally went, "Get a room!" Like, you know, good-naturedly, but...
Did she? Yeah. Oh, it was good-naturedly?
Yeah, yeah. She was just making... We all laughed at these two old people, me and her, snuggling on the streets of Gravenhurst.
You know, on... I went to... I guess it was a week ago Saturday. Anyway, in Peterborough, they have this thing called Music Fest, and it was Howard Jones.
Mm.
And I always like Howard Jones from our CFNY days.
Yeah, no one is to blame.
And it was funny, you talk about age. I'm sitting there watching the show, and at one point I turned around and I said, "I'm surprised at the age of the people here." I said to Darren, he goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, look at them. They all seem like they're in their 50s and 60s. And then it hit me when he was... When he was popular, all these people were like late 20s, early 30s.
That's right.
And anyway, it was fabulous. But yeah, it's like, wow, that was a... That, I thought these, all these people were kids when...
When Dan told me, because Dan was here, and he said you guys went to the concert, I said, you know, that's good for you. I mean...
For who?
For all you all.
It's good to get
out and do that. Especially, apparently, the seating... I'm sorry, the... Where you guys went, the...
Oh, yeah, it was good. It was
beautiful. Outdoor amphitheater.
Yeah, outdoor amphitheater was great. And, you know, there was a great crowd there, and he was great, and the sound was great. And I looked up on, you know, Celebrity Net Worth, and he's worth $16, $17
million. Anthony Bourdain.
I'm obsessed with that.
Yeah. Anthony Bourdain, by the way, net worth as of 2018, $16
million. Is that what it said?
Yeah.
Wow, I would figure that.
Yeah.
That had to be a mistake, obviously. Said 1.2.
Oh, Anthony Bourdain's will reveals net worth of 1.2 million. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
This is according to CBS News.
So this is net versus gross.
No. Left most of his 1.2 million estate to his 11-year-old daughter.
That's what I saw.
Arianne. Yeah, I didn't have that much.
Maybe
left.
Owed some money.
Yeah, well, maybe 14 million.
Anyway, reading the book about his life, it didn't seem as surprising that he would have taken his own life. I also watched this is when I got back. There's a new, I'm not sure if it's on Netflix or HBO, but it's called Come Inside My Mind. It's a documentary about Robin Williams and his struggles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a great documentary about how he, you know, what his life was like. And just cool little interviews with Letterman and some people that were there at the beginning. But toward the end, I mean, you know, he got this diagnosis with Parkinson's and... you know, he wasn't well the last few years, battling a lot of mental demons. And
you know, and I know we don't want to spend a lot of time because people are tired of it. But over this past week, too, that it struck me. The orange pig.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Trump, there's got to be something wrong with him. You know what I mean? Mentally, they've got to look into that because it's just not correct. There's something... Not right there.
Well, why don't you hold that thought, because it's part of the agenda. I have a New York Magazine article, and the headline is, "The President is Mentally Unwell, and Everyone Around Him Knows It."
Knows it, yeah.
I had some girlfriend, Rachel, brought up this spicy peanut butter.
It was spicy peanut butter?
It was a peanut butter from Cuba that had a little, was made with a little bit of chili in it.
Oh.
So it was very good peanut butter, but then the sort of had that little heat in it. And I was like, I just like Skippy or whatever. How great can peanut butter be? And then you have it, and then you're like, oh, it could be this good.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was really good. With some kind of jam.
It wasn't that natural peanut butter. I can't stand the oil stuff.
No, it was stupid.
I can't stand that stuff.
That's stupid.
That's
as stupid as kayaking.
And puzzles.
Well, it's funny you say that about kayaking, because several people have them around my place.
Of course they do.
And they have the sups, too. Do you mean the stand-ups?
No, I'd love the sups, whatever those are.
What's the difference?
Stand-up paddleboard is different than kayaking.
I know, but really, what's the difference?
Well, I know
physically it's different, but it's the same.
No, you're probably right.
You're out in the water. Although it's funny, you've done the stand-up paddling?
Yeah, I did it at your place.
Yeah. It's a bit of a challenge at the beginning. Yeah.
That appeals to me more because there is some balance challenge, and it's kind of cool. Where I went off kayaking by myself, and 10 minutes later, Rachel's like, "You back already?" I go, "Yeah, I kayaked. I went there and I came back. It was great."
Now
I'm going to get back to staring.
I'm surprised. So you would stare out at the lake
all day, every picture.
But being on the lake and paddling and in little coves and stuff didn't do it for you.
No,
really.
I mean, I guess I could have if I want. I could have got my head around it, but it took time away from just staring.
Sure.
Which I did. I only got about a third of the way through this book, and I put it down just because it was taking up too much staring time.
I know. I have a hammock right by the water, and a couple of times during the week, I fell asleep in it. Like, literally, like for an hour and a half.
On Tuesday, Fred, I fell asleep sitting in a chair with a towel around me.
Uh-huh.
It was like 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I had just gone for a swim, and I was reading my book, and I got a little tired to put the book down, and I had the towel up, and then I fell asleep. Like an hour in a chair. It was great. What I didn't remember about the lake, and maybe it's an age thing now, is when I used to go up, when we went up when the kids were younger for about a 10-year period, it was always very active. You know, you're always doing stuff and going places. But this time, being the age I am, and I hadn't done it in so long, I just found that it so much it was just super relaxing.
This is Humble and Fred.
We've got more segments from the Best of Humble and Fred archive. I'm Philip Pong. Thank you so much for listening to the Friday edition of the Best of Humble and Fred. First, a couple of very important announcements.
If you've got travel plans this holiday season, do you want to stay connected or what? This week only, you have a chance to win a GigSky SIM plus $100 in GigSky data for your upcoming trip. GigSky, of course, worldwide mobile data provider with service in over 190 countries. Most convenient and affordable way to stay connected. So, all you have to do is to enter. Let us know when and where you're traveling. This is that thing once again. And include why you would love to have the GigSky travel with you. It's a chance to win the SIM and $100 in data. Maybe you need a way to keep the kids entertained, GPS for the golf course, etc. Whatever the case, GigSky will keep you connected no matter where you are. The contest starts today, runs until next Wednesday, so get your entries in now. And Phil, I don't want you to post this whole thing except just summarize a paragraph, and it'll be on our Facebook page. Email humbleandfred@gigsky.com to enter. That's humbleandfred@gigsky.com to enter, and we would love for you to win this the SIM and the data package and give you a taste of what we're talking about when we talk about GigSky. The Chamber Plan, the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, wants you to know they are Canada's number one plan for employee benefits. If you haven't already, like some of our Humble and Fred people have, check it out. If you're a small business, 0 to 100 employees, these are benefits enjoyed by 30,000 Canadian businesses. Phil.
Like ours.
It's simple, stable, and smart. And you can get a free quote just like that at chamberplan.ca. There's also some small business tips, and there's a blog. Here's an interesting article on how to get the most for your business out of Twitter marketing. It's all there, and as I say, get a free quote at chamberplan.ca.
This is Humble and Fred.
I'm Philip Pong, and welcome back. You're listening to the Friday edition of The Best of Humble and Fred, and we're continuing this segment from the archive, featuring a segment talking about Facebook hoaxes and selfies and the price of beef.
Did you get all those people saying, oh, my Facebook has been hacked, my Facebook account, if you receive a friend request? Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw a couple of those.
Well, apparently it turned out to be a hoax.
But I don't accept. I haven't accepted friends in a long time anyway. So,
well, unless you go and look at that counter, you know, you've been... I mean, every once in a while I'll see it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you and I have an account that is fairly public, and a lot of people are sending us friend requests. But I got a bunch of Facebook Messenger messages saying, if you receive a request from me, do not accept
it. Yeah, but the Hummel and Fred one doesn't work that way. We don't have to accept
people. Talking about you and me personally.
Oh, personally. We have to accept them. I don't even look.
Yeah,
neither
people
do
just
I.
Like our page. Yeah.
But I don't...
You're not open for business.
Well, I haven't even looked at the list to see if anybody wants to be my friend. There's always people there, but I've lost interest.
But it just seemed like there was 48 hours of panic on the Facebook people.
Sure, don't add me under this
account. Don't. My brother sent me a thing, and it turned... point is, it all turned out to be nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it funny, as each day passes, each month, each week, whatever denomination of time
moment,
you want to use.
Hour.
Time passages.
Time passages.
Isn't the selfie becoming sickening?
Oh, my God.
Like, how does it...
I hate it.
Oh, no, okay, it is sickening. It's just, you know, there was a time maybe a couple of years ago where it was way more acceptable. You saw a selfie and you thought, oh, well, now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, how does anybody turn the camera around on themselves and then post it?
I couldn't agree with you
and
more.
Don't get me wrong. In the early days of Facebook and stuff, I did that.
Yeah,
but now, you just come to realize that nobody really cares about you.
I was going to say, I have a... You won't remember this, but I have a joke in my act about how... one of the things I don't like is when guys... when you get older, how you try and stay hip, you know, the way they talk. One of my buddies is always texting me, what's up, you know, SUP.
Mm-hmm.
I go, here's what's up, you're old and you probably have diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, the fact that when guys my age want to take selfies, it makes me sick. Now, we take pictures in this studio every day. It's part of what we do.
Those aren't selfies.
I know. But even having to have your picture taken daily is a bit annoying.
And only when the people that we have in here request it.
Mm-hmm.
And also for our purposes. The point I'm trying to make is you and I do this for a sort of our job. But my buddies, this one guy in particular, he's a great guy. But it's like, all of a sudden, we're out doing, hey, let's take a selfie. And I just want to like turn around.
Right.
I want to run.
Mm-hmm.
How about you take a selfie on your own?
Mm-hmm.
But when I see people, it's almost the weird, like, imagine this. Imagine 20 years ago, you were out somewhere and you saw somebody take their digital camera or even a regular camera and turn it around and take a picture of themselves.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy.
Like, what are you doing?
Yes. I know. Yeah. I know.
Take a selfie.
Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah. It's weird. It's so narcissistic and odd to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just that air of, oh, look at my wonderful life. Look at the wonderful things we do.
I've got to watch. Uh-huh. I'm in France.
Well, we've talked about the things that motivate people to post something always... I find that fascinating. The other thing...
fascinating.
The other thing, beside the Facebook hacking scandal... so you have an iPhone, I have an Android. I just like them. I've enjoyed this particular phone, the Samsung. It's my Edge 7. I really like it. It works well.
Mm-hmm.
But... And I'm not sure how it works with an iPhone. But, you know, you have your home screen, and your home screen has the apps that you use the most.
Right, all the icons you need.
All the icons. Mm-hmm. I have my contacts. I have Messenger and Chrome and all that stuff. But every once in a while, I do something. I don't know if this happens to you. Where in my fumbling, something will vanish from my home screen.
Right, you'll just drag it out of existence.
By mistake. Mm-hmm. I don't even mean to do it.
Okay.
And then, I don't know what, I need to know if there's a name for this. That's why I'm bringing it up. Where I can't remember what was on there. So I've left it this way. This is true. This has happened. I'm telling you, Sean.
Oh, no.
It's happened to me 3 or 4 times in the last month. Where I've done something with my big fat hands. And this has disappeared. See the hole there?
Right.
And I can't for the life of me tell you what was there.
Mm. Well,
but something was.
Don't
there.
Beat yourself up. There's a lot of icons there.
It does fill the screen.
Fred man.
What?
This is comedy.
Oh, okay.
Fred, man. I'm not beating myself. Dear therapist.
I, for the life of me, can't remember what was there. I'm obsessed.
Where's my mask?
Well, just scroll through and see where you put it.
Well, no, but that's the thing is, I've been doing, I scroll all day, and I can't remember what was on there.
On an iPhone, that's pretty hard. To get an icon to move to the next screen, you really got to hold
down.
You
got to drag it.
You got to drag it.
Right.
Or to eliminate one, you have to hold down. They all jiggle, and you have to hit the X.
Yes.
Is it like that on there?
With an Android, basically, you hold your finger on an app, and then it says uninstall.
Right.
Or move.
Or if you drag your icon up, it uninstalls on its own.
Hang on a second. I didn't want you to think that I was like, you know.
Well, you sound frustrated. I just didn't want.
I'm all, okay. Well, it's...
It's a comedy bit.
It's a comedy bit.
Yeah.
But it is frustrating that I... And I'm... See what I'm saying, Sean? Like, I... This has happened now a couple times recently where it's gone, and I look at it, and all the things I use... So whatever was there, obviously I didn't use it very much. Like, the one I use the most on this is the Weather Network, Maps, Clock. Here's what I use Clock for. Because I can't, without my glasses on, I can't see the time on my phone.
Oh, you're on the
top,
right.
So I go Clock, World Clock, and so it shows you the time.
Here's an analogy. I look at my iPhone and the icons much like I do the storage room in the basement of my house. Every so often I go in there and I think, I'm going to get rid of a bunch of stuff. And then I go to get rid of it and I think, maybe not. I'm going to use it. Nah, I don't know. And I'm like that with the icon. You know how often I sit there and scroll through and think, I got to dump some of these.
Sure.
And then ultimately I don't dump any because I think, well, yeah, I might use it. Yet there are so many. There's stuff on there I don't even know is on there. You know?
And you wind up with 7 pages of icons.
Yeah.
You know, I've got 7 pages of apps. I've got the Leafly. I've got Strain Print, Android Auto. I got. Is anyone using WhatsApp anymore? Does anyone use that?
I would say so. With you, Sean.
Anyways, I don't want you to think I'm morose over this. It's just I just thought it was amusing that this is now a thing. I'm nearly 60 years old, and I've thought about this quite a bit. That our generation, the sort of the late, you're sort of a late baby boomer. I'm an early Gen Xer. But the point is, the next 20 years is a bunch of people our age not being able to remember their password to anything,
right.
And can't find the apps. Anyway, I just wanted to say, Phil, what I think I should do is just take a screenshot of my home screen.
Okay.
Or to make it return to where it was.
Yeah, but the thing is, you'll know when you go for it. Because if it made page one,
yes,
obviously it's vital. So when you go to use it,
you'll know
you don't remember what it is now, but you'll go to use it one day and go, oh, where to go? And then you'll reinstall it there. What I need, this Flip app.
Yeah, Flipboard?
No, the Flip.
Oh,
with
Flip,
the double P. All the flyers.
All your flyers on it. Yes, that's your favorite.
It's on my back page. It should be on my front page now. I used it again today because I'm looking for some ground beef. So
I'm sorry, you were doing that during the show?
No, prior to the show. Because I thought on the way home I want to get some ground beef. So where's it on offer this week?
Isn't that funny, eh?
What?
What our day's going to be so different.
Well, you don't mind ground beef? You don't shop?
I do, but
Today happens to be the day I
ground
shop.
Beef day. Speaking of which, I had this conversation with Rachel about the difference between you and I. And I said, and I think this will be a fun game for us. I don't want to do it now because we're going to need some preparation, Phil. I said, a fun game with Fred and I is The Price is Right. Because Fred knows the price, I think, of a lot of things that I do not know. And I say that as an attribute for you, not as a, I'm not, this isn't a knock. It's a knock against myself. I just don't have a sense of the price of things. And I said a fun game on the show would be Phil doing The Price is Right, higher, lower. So the idea, Phil, is maybe we'll do this tomorrow. You'd get a flyer.
Sure.
And we just, on an everyday item. Like if you said to me, Howard, ground beef is on offer today for $14.99 a pound, I'd go, cool.
What?
I don't know.
$14?
Yeah. I don't. So, do you know what I'm saying? Like, whereas I know you, if I said a bag of milk, you would know.
No. See? I wouldn't do as well in that game as you think. And that's why I use Flip. I have no idea. But, I have no idea.
But so, how would you know if it's a good price then? See, I would not know.
Well, based on what the flyers say.
No, I know, but if you, you'd have to know what regular ground beef is
Yeah,
is
but
worth.
It wouldn't make flip. So the thing is, I don't care. Believe it or not, I don't care that much about prices. I really don't. Because if I would just go to flip. Number one, I look and I hear ground beef, and then I just look at the couple of stores around me, and I think, oh, yeah, they've got a sale.
And they list
I'll
regular price as well,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. But I couldn't tell you what a fair good price is for ground. Like, I wouldn't do as good. Like, toilet paper stuff, like, yeah, you could throw that stuff out.
Okay,
I have
well,
no
I,
idea.
See, I thought you would. I said to Rachel, I said, because she and I were saying, not from because we had so much money.
Right.
This came up because she and I went to Topps Friendly Market, and we did some. I bought some. We made some dinner when we were away this weekend. Mm-hmm. One night I made dinner. One night she made dinner. And when we were shopping, you know, I couldn't have told you if that was a good price for salmon or not. And we had this conversation. I said the Fred man would have a better idea. I want to do the prices right on the show.
Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, here's what I do. If I want salmon, I don't even care what it costs. I just go buy it.
This is Humble and Fred.
We've got more from the week on the Friday edition of The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. There's more on the way. Please keep listening.
Welcome to my Christmas song. I'd like to thank you for the year. So I'm sending you this Christmas card to say it's nice to have you here.
Highlights of the week on The Best of Humble and Fred. Powered by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, Strain Print, and Play for the Cat.
Sean, get ready to tell your stories. Phil, how much of Phil's story did you have to listen? I mean, did you listen to this morning? That was a big vortex, wasn't it? Huh?
Yeah, I had a few questions, too, because he was on Facebook while he was gone and posting that he was in Frankfurt, Switzerland, and that was...
Germany.
Sorry. yeah. I just thought that was kind of bizarre, because you definitely weren't aiming there, and no. You hadn't brought that up. So,
well, so I was the first one downstairs today, and it started with Phil explaining his trip to me, then Fred, then Sean. But there was a bit of a mix-up with the flight...
Yes.
You were supposed to come. You were going Singapore, San Francisco, home.
Yes.
And then you had to go Singapore,
Frankfurt, Washington, D.C., then home. 22 hours of straight flying.
Oh. So you actually flew over North America?
I flew around the world, basically, in this week of whirlwind tour.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out, is that he was supposed to fly Singapore, San Francisco, Toronto.
Through Asia, the Pacific Ocean.
But you went the other way.
Yes,
and flew Europe to home.
Atlantic.
And that added how much flying?
Oh, well, it's supposed to be, if you can believe this, it's actually longer to go back through San Francisco. It's about 23 hours.
What was the longest leg that you were on an airplane?
17 and a half hours from San Francisco to Singapore. But it's convenient because it's one plane, right? And so in order to kind of, like, they had an issue with the wheel of the plane.
I still don't understand what you do on an airplane for 17 and a half hours.
Let me get this straight. So you get on an airplane and you're on the same airplane for 17 and a half hours?
Yes.
In the air?
Mm-hmm. Ugh. But it gets you directly there.
Like, I had a three-hour flight to Fort Lauderdale, and because of the way the tickets were purchased on my behalf from my good friends at Clublink and WestJet and Merit Travel, these are the people I do this hosting for, they got me a premium upgrade because it was the only seat left.
Sure.
So I had it there and back, and I'm going to tell you, it's not first class, but it's, you know, you have nobody in between you, and you get some good leg room.
Mm.
But you, on that 17 and a half hour flight, you didn't have that.
I was flying to qualify for that status, actually, and I did. I got qualified for Star Alliance Silver status when I reached Singapore. So theoretically, that flight home would have had a complimentary upgrade to premium economy.
Hmm. So what's the kind of a seating arrangement on a 17 and a half hour flight?
Well, that was United's newest 787, and it's three across, so nine seats in each row.
So how much room? Is it a regular seat, or is it a little bit wider?
It's actually smaller, if you can believe that.
Oh. And where were you? In the middle?
No, I chose the seat all the way in the back, middle bench, because, you know, no one would ever choose that seat usually. And so,
what do you mean middle bench?
You know, like, because we're talking about, you know, a dual aisle airplane, right? And so I choose the last row of the plane usually on an aisle seat because, you know, it's literally all the way in the back and no one would ever want to sit there. It's limited recline, limited everything. And so the thing is, I usually get the extra two seats beside me.
So did you have that this time?
I did, yes, on the way there. But on the way back.
Okay, so you had, so for 17 and a half hours, you had nobody beside you.
Right, I had a park bench.
So you couldn't recline?
Well, not very much, but you can. Yes, it was
good. Did you lay across them at all?
Yes. It was sufficient.
What do you do for 17 and a half hours when you're not sleeping? Like, did you watch movies or?
I kept napping. They had three different meal services. It was perfect.
I don't know. I know a little bit about weight and balance on an airplane. In order for an aircraft to go somewhere, they have to have enough fuel to fly to the destination, and then enough fuel to an alternate destination, and 45 minutes of fuel on top of that. I don't know. It just seems preposterous that the thing could stay in the air, even though I know they can, for 17 and a half hours.
Right. Isn't that crazy? We're talking about a two-engined airplane, right? This is normally a route for four-engined airplanes, like a 747 or something bigger than that. But they managed to send like a tiny, 200-something seat airplane, 17 and a half hours to Singapore and back.
And was the food good?
Oh, it was beautiful. It was wonderful. Yes.
So you land, I think you explained this before you left, you got to Singapore on a Saturday?
It was Saturday morning,
and
8 a.m.
Pearl didn't arrive until night.
11 p.m.
And then what happened on Pearl's arrival?
We had that Love Actually kiss. She came. So the baggage claim had glass windows. You can see the people coming out of the doors through customs. And so the minute I spotted her, she saw me and gave me a giant smile, and we kind of made out for about 4 or 5 minutes after.
Oh, okay. So you see her. And she's coming through the terminal.
Yeah.
And like in the movie, everyone is embracing. You see Pearl. Mm-hmm. Now, did you freshen up your mouth?
Oh, yes.
Like a mint or something?
Oh, Mentos. What's
So you had a fresh mouth for Pearl.
Yep.
And you embraced. And then did you make out there or did you go to a private place?
We made out there until Singapore Customs told us to go away.
He's a student.
She was too close to the door. No, she was too close to the door.
So now you pick her up, and when did you and Mrs. Yu finally get to have some intimate time?
Well, we had dinner at the airport, and then, they have a lot of restaurants there, 24 hours a day.
Had dinner before you left the airport?
Yeah, we both had steaks.
Usually you leave the airport and have dinner.
Yeah, they make it a destination.
But you had been there all day.
Yeah.
Had you not?
Well, no, I went to Indonesia and then the hotel before I showed up at the airport.
So you had dinner at the airport, then you took her to the hotel room.
Yeah, and then...
You had some dessert.
Yes.
Good for you.
Something whipped.
That poor woman.
Yeah, can you imagine, Sean? Like, Phil hasn't... Because I don't really know what Phil's self-love schedule is. I don't know how he's got a cat. Phil's very much like Winston in New Girl, you know? Do you ever watch that series?
New Girl, no. Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
But, you know, he's whimsical, he's odd. You had a lot of built-up sexual chemistry.
Yearning.
Fred had that survey in our last segment about what's more important, even millennials, sleep versus sex. Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, you hadn't seen your wife in how long?
8.5 months.
And how many days were you together?
7 days.
And how many interludes do you think you had in those 7 days?
6 out of 7, because that last night I caught her cold.
Oh,
and so
Phil.
She had to nurse me all night.
Oh, no, did she? Is that what you call
hot
it?
Hot flashes, cold flashes.
You play the nurse. Well, I'm glad you had a nice time.
Thank you.
Well, you, yeah.
But the way home was other temperatures and everything, and had your fun.
But the way home was a disaster, though, because, as I said, that the plane, I was supposed to come home directly, San Francisco, that stupidly long flight.
And what was the problem again? A wheel or something?
A wheel had to be replaced, and then the way they replaced the wheel, the workers decided the flight crew couldn't.
They
keep
got
on
timed
working.
Out.
They got timed out.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I had to be rerouted through Germany, and I went to Germany and I bought an apple soda, and then I came home.
Thanks for the apple soda.
Yeah, that's a great detail.
Thanks for the apple soda.
It's a Phil story, right?
Thanks for the apple soda. That's a detail. Yeah, that's great.
They're very depressing.
I was asking him how long he was in Frankfurt there, and he said he was only there for 5 hours.
Yeah.
But I was telling him, you should have gone to the McDonald's, got a McBeer. You got to try that out. That's a thing in Frankfurt.
So. I was in Frankfurt this summer for like 90 minutes. Just long enough to hard stare some Germans. Yeah, I just looked at them. Yeah.
See what it's like.
Just looking at you guys.
Pretty dark airport.
I'm keeping an eye on all you Germans.
Yeah. I think the last time I was in Germany, in Munich, I had a pork hock. It was good.
Had a what?
Pork hock.
Pork hock. Yeah.
You had a pork hock?
It's like a big pork knuckle.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's fantastic, eh? Yeah.
Oh, you're saying pork hock.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought something else.
Oh, poor.
Yeah, the last time I was in Germany, I had a pork hock.
Did you really?
Oh, you poor thing.
Oh, a man. Hey, Sean Sargent is here. He's an associate producer now. Soon to be, it looks like he's got some other great news happening in his radio life. We're excited for him. We'll keep that
it's
on.
It's a start.
We'll just, you know what? We'll just say that for people. By the way, Sean's going to be at our Christmas party. Come and meet him along with Phil. Have your picture taken with Phil. It's a holiday tradition.
Yep, the Phil Petting Zoo.
And I think I mentioned we're going to Facebook Live the entire performance. What's going on with you? What's the story? Highlights in the news.
Highlights in the news. We kind of touched on a lot. I didn't have a lot to talk about because I knew you guys wanted to, you know, address the week off we had. But
what's the story here? God wrongfully impregnated teenage virgin Mary without consent.
So this
says
was,
Minnesota professor.
Yes, this is a psychology professor that was on Fox News with Tucker Carlson.
Yes, of course.
And Tucker Carlson's just laughing away as this guy brings up this topic and how it's kind of just really the psychology perspective of it, obviously. Virgin Mary was impregnated by a god.
Yeah.
That a being that, and it wasn't her decision. It was without consent. Mm. And so this is the typical
Let's ban the Bible then.
Almost, yeah. So... Yeah. I know it's not that huge of a story, but I thought that was pretty interesting.
You know, there are passages in the Bible that call for women to be stoned, for children to be sacrificed.
Mm-hmm. He was a vengeful God.
Seriously, if you want to get into the politically correct movement, look at the Bible.
Oh, it's just a lovely book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more highlights from the week on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. This is On Air, Online, The Best of Humble and Fred. First, a couple of very important messages.
This is kind of a unique thing, and I'm really excited. I say on behalf of all of us, we're very excited to welcome our very first client that is a musical act, a band.
Mm-hmm.
And the band, the official band of the Humble and Fred show for the next few months, because they were trying to figure out ways to get some publicity for the release of their album.
Right.
And they came to us. And the band is called Plea for the Cat. They have kind of a... We're going to learn all kinds of things about this band, but you can see they're very, very sort of Prince-influenced, a little funk, Phil. I know you'd like that.
Yeah.
And their release, their album, is called Decade. And in the next couple of months, we're going to expose you to this band. Great music. They're based in Guelph, Ontario, but the band members are scattered all over the place. The album release is this month. Go to playforthecat.com. Let's have a listen to one of their songs. This is called Hold Me to It. They describe their music a modern flavor of 80s, new wave, and funk. The songs are celebratory and uplifting, which might help here on the program.
Right on.
FYI Music News.
FYI Music News.ca. You know, there's a lovely feature this week about a friend of the show who's been on the show. And I love him dearly like a brother. Ivor Hamilton.
Oh, Ivor.
Celebrating 30 years with Universal Music Canada as their catalog marketing vice president. He's been a big shot there for years and years. He's a sweetheart. I sent him a note last week and I said, Ivor, celebrate 30 years at Universal by running 30 miles today.
because he's a big runner
marathon,
now.
Yeah.
Marathon, he's the marathon man. But again, it's a great thing about FYMMusicNews.ca. You know, they can highlight and they can focus on people like Ivor, who has had a long and distinguished career in the music business in Canada. Good on him. Today's new track is Chromeo, Don't Sleep. FYIMusicNews.ca. It's a journal about Canada's music industry. Check it out, FYIMusicNews.ca.
This is Humble and Fred.
Barker.
Yeah.
What are the commercials you're in? I saw you in a commercial the other day. Are you somewhat exasperated? You're playing like a mother or something? What would that one be?
I have two that are out currently that I know of. One is a Betadine commercial where there's a lottery. I'm waiting for a lottery. The numbers, the girl who's announcing the numbers.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of office people and I'm looking at her with a bit of a sneer.
Yeah.
Particularly unattractive moment for me.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then there's another one where I'm in a Christmas sweater that's lit up.
That's the one
and
I
saw. Dancing with Will Arnett.
Yes.
Or next to Will
I
Arnett.
I saw it.
Well, was Will Arnett on the set of the commercial?
Yeah, I shot with Will Arnett.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I thought it was like
an
image.
Actually.
For the cell phone company, right?
Yeah, for a phone company.
And is he a nice man?
Yeah, those are the two that I'm in right now, and I just did a
No, I saw you were
spots.
In my living room the other night, and you were welcome.
Oh, thank well, you. That is nice. Oh.
So Merry that's Amanda Christmas. Barker. She's a wondrous actor, voiceover artist, Christmas angel. Where are you spending Christmas this year, by the way?
Here. I'm not going nowhere. This is the first Christmas that Marco and I have had a tree ever, like a real tree. I'm not going to Florida. I'm not going to LA. I'm not going to Halifax. I'm not all the places I normally have to go. I'm not going to any of them. I'm giving the finger to all my family.
So it's just going to be what family is going to be part of this?
Well, the Timpanos are here.
Oh,
that's
yes.
my in-laws. So we'll see them a bit, but mostly it's just going to be us watching Netflix, which I cannot wait.
So my kids are going to be here. Charlie comes back from New York, you know, as she does. She's coming back next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And
for the holidays. Yeah.
She's coming back for a couple weeks.
Nice.
I'm going to do Christmas here. And then I'm going to girlfriend Rachel's family who lives in Stratford for a dinner like a couple days later.
Is this like several family members that you haven't met before?
Oh, no. It's just the family that I have met. Her brother's sister.
A waspy little
Christmas.
Oh,
super waspy.
So there's no potential for disaster or anything?
No.
Good.
Unlike some young Hebrews, I came in very under the radar, very quiet. You know, I didn't go full simmer down Jew face. I eased into the family.
Nice. Good strategy.
Very good strategy. But here's the thing. The Hiltons have a family tradition where they do a secret Santa.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone exchanges a gift, a name or whatever. You draw a name and then you buy that person a gift around $25.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all online.
It's all online.
Oh, yeah. You know, because it's where everyone lives in different places. Her brother lives in Copenhagen. Her sister-in-law lives in Geneva. Her parents live here. So I was online this morning seeing who I got as a secret Santa. And then you're supposed to ask questions anonymously, you know, like what kind of things you're looking for. It's the funny thing is it's all online.
That's really funny.
It's weird.
What I take from that is Humble and Fred luck. You get hooked up with a Hilton, but not one of those.
Exactly. it's funny you say that.
Why is that?
Well, just because, you know.
That's come up before?
Well, no. What's come up is getting hooked up with the Glassmans, you know, the only Hebrews who don't have a lot of money.
Nice luck.
It's like, exactly. What kind of luck? They're from the prairies. That doesn't get you any kind of vacation home. Anyway. I'm going to be there, and you're having your traditional...
Yeah, immediate family.
Nice.
In-laws, that's it. Only about 10 of us.
Nice.
Very nice.
Oh, that'll be nice.
It's very quiet. You know, it's not chaotic.
I haven't really been. Charlie's the one in our family that drives the Christmas spirit the most. She likes the traditional stuff. And the kids will, even though they're 20 and 24, will wake up Christmas morning and I'll make sure they have to stay on the stairs so they can see if Santa came. I mean, it really is a thing.
Oh, you do that?
All of it. Oh, yeah. I've been doing it for years.
My Christmas is just a FaceTime extravaganza.
But I don't know. Spencer doesn't eat meat. I don't know. Some years we've had lobster.
We did for Christmas Day?
Yeah, that was our Christmas dinner.
Italians do such a spread on Christmas Eve in terms of fish. It is, honestly, if there's one good reason to be married to an Italian or Catholic.
I heard the Christmas Eve thing is outstanding.
It's phenomenal. Because traditionally you do 8 different kinds of fish. You have to have 8 different kinds of fish on the, I don't know why. 8 crazy nights.
I can't name 8 different types of fish.
Wow, there's bacala, which is salted cod. There's always crab. There's always lobster. There's
and
always
that,
shrimp.
That counts
there's
always okay. That counts
yeah,
fish.
So,
yeah, marine life.
Yeah, okay. sea meats.
Sea meat. I just don't know what I'm going to say. Because a couple of years ago, I did a turkey. And then I had to buy a tofu turkey for Spencer.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah. Oh. It was basically just a ball that looked like a sort of a tiny basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same consistency.
Does it taste like
it was
turkey?
Awful.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Why?
Well, guess there won't be a
sponsor. So why can't you make a turkey and her just eat the vegetables?
I could.
You could get creative with the vegetables.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. So I'm going to wait until she tells me what she would like. I'll probably make some kind of vegetarian
dish. Is she vegan still?
Yeah.
Is that still a thing? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I went out for lunch with her yesterday, and mm-hmm. we had a vegetarian tofu, vegetarian pho.
Nice. Very nice. No, it wasn't.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
You know, you've had pho before, have you? It's basically just a big bowl of Vietnamese soup.
I had pho before?
I don't know.
It's one of those, remember, I'm one of the great stories.
Yeah, we had it together.
In making my stomach explode halfway up Dixie Road.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not the only time you've had it.
May have been.
Well, the way I order it is 3 types of meat.
Mm-hmm.
Rare, well done, and balls.
Except for that 1 year that you were vegetarian.
Except for the 14 months I was a vegetarian.
Yeah, what year was that? 2016?
That was 16.
2016.
16 into 17.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it'll be... And what about you, Hong?
Well, I'm actually bringing... My cousin Mike is coming up. We're going to buy a bunch of turkeys or chickens together. We're going to make a potluck out of everything. Yeah.
Like are you gonna pluck them and? That's what
well, we're
like.
probably gonna buy frozen. But the thing is, my sister Liz really loves the little, you know, the side dishes that come with it. She'll candy some yams. She'll put together some carrots. It's beautiful.
You know, a little tip here. These Butterball Cook from Frozen's already stuffed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't like them because they think, you know, they're too manufactured, whatever.
Sure.
But the thing is, those are good. Take it out about 10 degrees. Before it says, mm-hmm. and they're great. They really are. And they're very quick and simple.
So
you don't have to worry about thawing the turkey.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, that's what I might do, because I've done that before. And because usually I worry about, is it going to get to temperature? But you can take it right out of the fridge
and put it right in the oven.
Oven.
And it takes a little longer, obviously. But again, don't overcook it. So I say maybe even, you know, maybe 12 degrees early. Take it out, cover it with a towel or something. And they're great.
1 year I brined a turkey.
I did that too.
Yeah,
1 year.
Really. That was the most adventurous I'd ever done. I did, you know, because you need a 5-gallon jug.
It took a lot of space.
A lot of work.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But the meat was good.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, there's only going to be 4 of us, and then I'm going to go have dinner again with Rachel and her family.
That's the thing. If you don't have a huge gathering, then it's kind of like, we can just order in.
Well, yeah. See, you know? I wish we could do that. I mean, I really would like to get back on the...
Why can't you?
Well, because...
But you could.
Because of Charlie. Charlie likes the traditional Christmas that we created.
Well, that's good.
And I'm going to do it for her.
There you go.
That's nice.
It's so funny in this modern world. So as Charlie sends a note to all of us that, you know, what time her plane's coming in. And then there was a bunch of texting going back and forth with Spencer and my ex-wife and Charlie yesterday in the car. And then I saw on my phone when we finally parked, I got a meeting request from Randy for brunch.
You know, one of those
things.
That's
funny.
Yeah, like one of those Google, will you have brunch?
We get them for here.
Yeah, exactly.
For meetings,
I got a meeting request.
Oh, that's funny.
To all of us to meet at brunch.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's
anyway,
so funny.
I was in, both Fred and I were in Florida last week, and I was going to ask you this. I'd written it down to bring it up as a subject. I've touched on it before. I spent a lot of time traveling in the States over the years, first as a comic, then just as a traveler in vacation land. I just have a weird feeling, a different feeling, in maybe it's just Florida. And I was in where I was staying was just minutes from the Parkland shooting community.
Yeah.
In fact, I played at a park that was called the Parkland Golf and Country Club, so right in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But do you ever feel like
do you ever think, you know, because you know, obviously the chances of being involved in an active shooting are pretty minuscule, but they're certainly higher there than here and higher than it used to be. Has that ever crossed anyone else's mind or just me?
You know, I was there a week. I didn't think about it once. All I said is I saw that guy in the back of his jacked up pickup truck one night waving a Trump flag. That's a tad unsettling because you think, what's the point? What's he like? What's the deal here? But no, moment to moment, I don't, to be honest.
How about you? Yeah.
I do. I always think. I mean, I'm my DNA is wired that way. Like, it's funny here. I always used to work. For some reason, I always had this fear that somebody would come into this studio and kill us. I used to always have that fear. But I don't have it here. I used to have it in the other place.
In the old place?
Which makes zero sense.
Yeah,
because
look at this.
We're much more exposed here. But
yeah, this is a lot more easy access. Fred's
I'll be honest. So
cradling his head in his
hand. I don't even like hearing that.
I apologize. You asked.
No.
Every movie theater. If I'm in a movie that's popular, it's the first thing I think of. I look at the exits and think about.
There or here?
Who's close? Here. I think about it everywhere.
You know, our situation now. I mean, easy access, you're live on the air. What a way to make a splash.
I feel a little bit more protected.
All you have
Canada,
to do is look at our ratings. You're not making a splash here. I mean, this isn't where you want to.
Honestly, I think it was back when we had certain listeners that were scaring me.
This is Humble and Fred.
This edition of The Best of Humble and Fred is brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, Strain Print, and Play for the Cat.